Welcome to Give a Heck. I am your host, Dwight Heck, and for much of my life, lived my life in quiet desperation, wondering how I was going to pay the bills, take vacations, save for retirement, and one day wondering if I would get off the hamster wheel of life and have purpose. A life that most of society lives, which takes us to work, then home, then repeat, and pays us hopefully enough just to survive. The harsh truth that most live with more month than money and have no idea how to live life on purpose, not by accident. This ensures the mass majority are living not just financially broke, however emotionally and mentally as well due to financial pressures. In each episode, I will introduce you to thoughts, ideas, and guests that can help you to learn how you too can live life on purpose, not by accident.
Good day, and welcome to Give a Heck. On today's show, I welcome Mike Procy. Mike has corporate experience in engineering, continuous improvement, facilitation, and innovation. Mike is currently the manager of technology and innovation management office for a large oil and gas utility company. His areas of focus include employee engagement, organizational behavior, and corporate culture. Additionally, promoting and refining the Cratic AI SaaS tool. What is Cratic, you ask? Well, Mike, along with his partner, Israel Peck, have created an AI-based tool that is changing how employees interact and perform. A lot of tools measure team culture. Cratic builds culture. Cratic facilitates conversation, analyzes emotions, and helps people find common ground. Team simply registers and begins answering open-ended questions. The machine learning does the rest. The tool creates custom growth experiences for every team and user. It finds exact topics each team needs to discuss to move forward. Bottom line, using AI and machine learning, their SaaS suite helps teams grow emotional intelligence quickly, resolve workplace toxicity, accelerate storming, norming, performing, build trust and foundational dialogue, and ultimately shape the productive team dynamics we all desire in our workplace. I'd like to welcome you to the show, Mike. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on and share with us some of your life journey.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Dwight. Glad to be here and love the intro.
You're welcome. So we talked about prior, and anybody that's a longtime listener, which I have quite a few, I focus on people's origin story. I don't talk a lot about why, just as an addition for you to, I never mentioned that to you. You might've caught it on some of my earlier podcasts. It's mostly because it frustrates me what the movie industry has done to us by starting out movies in the middle and then going back to the origin later. Star Wars, Marvel, the list goes on, right? Yeah. So for me, it's just, even listening to other podcasts or just having conversations, people always skim over the fact that what was little Mike like, right? Why did Mike become who he is, right? What happened in your life, good, bad, or ugly, made you pivot specifically? And maybe some people will say, you know what? I didn't realize until a few years ago that this happened in my childhood. And that's why I respond certain ways. This is how I react certain ways in life. So to me, the origin story is key, as we talked about prior to recording. So Mike, can you tell me your origin story and what key things from your childhood to adulthood led you to where you're at currently in life?
Oh, wow. Right out of the gate with a tough question. No, that's a good one, Dwight. I appreciate that. So my origin story in life and what kind of things have led me to that. So firstly, I'd say that I just identified this year that my core values as a human, or things that I really enjoy or kind of strive towards, are making people laugh and helping people. Like, that's kind of my two big things. So I guess I can kind of think back now on the spot a little bit and think, okay, how did I maybe develop those? I'd say I have three older brothers kind of growing up, and all of us are quite outgoing, kind of quite loud. We tend to be quite jokey and jovial, and that's a lot like my dad as well. So I kind of always grew up in that environment where fun was always just kind of like the number one. And we always kind of had fun with each other, you know, played games and stuff like that, and just were generally all class clowns. So it wasn't until a little bit later that I realized, okay, I should probably try focusing on something and develop a few skills. And then I ended up going into engineering and going down that path, which was great. But I always tried to keep and maintain that kind of happy, fun, humor aspects of my life, because it was so important to me. It was so important to me as an individual. It was really how I define myself and how I like to define myself. So that's always been kind of deeply ingrained as a family. And then probably the helpful came a little bit later in life. My mom ended up going back to school quite a bit later. I think she was around 45 and went to become a child development counselor. And she kind of talked with me a lot about like helping other people and just how important it is and everything. And I remember a bit of advice that I still take to this day, like whenever you're uncomfortable in a situation, look for somebody that's also alone and just go talk with them. And that's actually how I ended up meeting my wife. Like it was our first day at the organization where we were both interning at the time. And I was like a little bit uncomfortable. There was a lot of people there that I didn't know, and she was kind of standing by herself. So I just went over and started talking to her. So a lot of good things have come from that advice. And then it was really kind of reaffirmed, or I'd say prior to that, it was reaffirmed just early on in my life, like probably in middle school. And I've never really articulated or thought about this before too much, but why I'm so passionate around kind of making people happy and helping people and kind of having good group dynamics and have people work together well is because I didn't when I was younger. Like, I think I was kind of a little bit of a jerk as a kid. I would describe myself definitely as a jerk. I kind of just did what I wanted all the time. I wasn't the best with sharing. This is like middle school, like younger than 13. And I remember one day, a long, long time ago, when I was in middle school, everyone kind of went around the table at lunch and talked about what they didn't like about me. And it was really, really uncomfortable. It was
way harsh.
Yes, it was very harsh, but middle school kids are. And so obviously I was really impacted by that. I went to the washroom and I was crying about it and everything, which was really tough. And then one of my friends actually came too, who at the time wasn't a great friend, but now I've been friends with him, like lifelong friends. We're still very, very close. Kind of came, but that really, I would say, shifted my perspective in just that, like, you need to be nice to people. Like at the end of the day, you need to be kind, you need to be authentic. And that's kind of what I try to drive in all aspects of my life, trying to make sure that all sides of myself are very aligned. So I'd say all of that kind of built into the making people laugh and helping people out. And I've never articulated that story before, so it came out a little bit.
Oh no, you did great. You're a good storyteller, actually. That was great, Cher. There was nothing negative about that. It was very honest and sincere, and I appreciate you sharing. Like, I like the round. I don't know, middle school, if I could tolerate having a group of people, you know, roasting me, because that's basically what it is. You're getting roasted.
Yes. Yeah.
You're going across the coals, and it's pretty intense. But for you to even as an adult to look back and realize that was a pivotal moment in your life is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
Most people won't acknowledge that. So good for you.
Yeah, I think before and after it was probably night and day, like in terms of who I was as a person and everything. Just because I I wasn't very nice before. Like I talked about, more selfish, I'd say, than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, at the end of the day, you're talking about, you know, your brothers and fun was number one and happy humor is how you want to define yourself, you know, just stuff like that. Your mom going back to school, even your mom going back to school had to have been something that, you know, maybe you didn't realize back then. It would be a proud thing to look back on and think, wow, my mom was 45, went back to school. And then and then by her going back to school, she taught me something that has stuck with me. So the catalyst effect, right? The little fine threads of the spider web of life, right? And mm-hmm. And that's just amazing how you shared that. I really appreciate it, right? And, you know, talking, and that's how you met your wife, going and talking to the uncomfortable. One of the things that I've been to more than 150 conferences in my life, 150 to 200. I even trying to count, it would be difficult. And you go into those conferences, and you see the cliques. It reminds me of high school.
Mm-hmm.
of the people that know one another that are conference junkies, and they go from mm-hmm. conference to conference to conference, and you feel left out. And I've gone, and I'm introverted. I have to force myself to be extroverted. My energy gets drained really easy in those environments. I don't like big conferences anymore, but I will look for people and I'll go over and start talking to them, you know, mm-hmm. and just break the ice, because they are feeling uncomfortable. If you're feeling uncomfortable and you're both standing in the shadows and nobody talks, does anybody hear? Mm-hmm. No. Is anybody mm-hmm. listening? Be that person that wants to listen. So good for you. I appreciate that take on, you know, connection with people and your origin. And yeah, so listeners, everybody in life has things that we can look back on and acknowledge. If you haven't, do it. If it's something that's uncomfortable for you, maybe talk it out with somebody that you trust, that you know, like, and trust, that won't be a jerk about it. And they'll just, oh, wow, Mike, that's kind of interesting. I really appreciate that. Or, hey, Mike, have you thought about this? Maybe you're looking at your past the wrong way. What was the pivotal moment that came out of it? So, you know, you've obviously thought about it, which is great. So thank you so much for sharing. So, Mike, your areas of focus include employee engagement, organizational behavior, and corporate culture. On this path, your partner Israel and you created the Cradic AI SaaS tool. Take us on the journey of the experiences you've had that lead to the ultimate idea and creation of an AI that assists in creating sustainable high productivity and unity among employees.
Okay, another great question. So I'd say, I started my career in the 2013 timeframe as an engineer, and I graduated from engineering. And like I think most engineers, I might be wrong, I didn't have really any idea what an engineer does. So even upon graduation, I realized that the field is quite broad, and there's so many different things that you can do. So I started my career, and I joined an organization. And I started looking at the corporate culture and kind of working in this corporate culture space. So it's been really fun. It's been an incredibly fun journey. But I started talking with more and more of my peers, my age, across industry, like different people. And it really doesn't matter what industry you're in. But one thing that was fairly consistent was that a lot of my peers in engineering that graduated and went on to join great companies, there was a little bit of a wanting in speaking with them, wanting more, a little bit more of those intrinsic kind of motivators, like wanting more opportunities, more challenges, more authentic conversations, leading projects, you know, whatever it is, there's just certain things that they wanted to explore a little bit more. And so I kind of saw and I noticed a huge emergence in side hustles. Like it seemed like everybody had a side hustle. You know, I've worked with people that were incredible engineers, but on the side they paint, or on the side they're running paint nights or music nights or their YouTube channel, right? Whatever it is, there's so many incredibly talented individuals. And so I thought about myself and my own kind of side hustle and how I would define myself. And at the time I was doing a lot of work with my partner Israel Peck around like large major transformational culture changes. And he really had kind of the idea and thought about there must be a way for large organizations to reinvent and re-engage and reignite their culture. Like if you've been an organization for over 100 years, over 200 years, you know, 50 years, whatever it might be, that culture is going to live and breathe and start to exist on its own. So how do you really influence that? And how do you really impact that? And he came up with this simple method of just helping people have authentic, real conversations in the workplace and seeing what comes out of it. And that was really when Cradic was born and then kind of started. And then in 2020, I stepped up as the CEO. So he actually started it, founded the company, developed it, built the platform and everything. I was working with him kind of unofficially, consulting with him and everything. We were working together on a lot of that stuff. And he said, look, let's work on this together. You know, you've been almost like a co-founder to me in a lot of ways. Do you want to join together? And then I stepped up in September 2020, and we've been working on it together ever since. And it's been an incredible journey. We've just learned so much about culture. We've been able to meet so many different individuals from so many different organizations, so many different industries. And one thing that's been reaffirmed kind of for me is the optimist in me. Like, there's good things about every culture. I have not met a team yet that we've worked with where there hasn't been something I really loved about their culture that I wish we could bottle and like give to everybody. So that's kind of what Kratic is trying to do, is bottle those culture aspects, make them very scalable, make them very digestible to people, and help get them and help transmit them worldwide.
Wow. I love that. There's listeners, you need to rewind and listen to that again, the amount of nuggets of information that were in there in such a concise way. Yeah, I can appreciate lots of that. Obviously, one of my close friends, and you and I have talked about him, Tony Whatley, has a book called Side Hustle Millionaire. Right? He created a company, he sold for millions of dollars, and is still the largest online community in the world 20 years ago. And he sold it a long time ago. And literally, he did it all on the side hustle. Guess what his career was? He's an engineer.
Right? Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Tony Whatley. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Engineer. Yeah. Very high-level engineer. Yeah. High six figures engineer. Not like he was very predominant in the oil and gas industry in Texas. And he created his side hustle on the side, right? Because he wanted more. And he knew he could do more. And once he developed and went through all that processes and the oil and gas industry crashed, he realized that, you know, his side hustle created everything that he had become. And on all the knowledge he got from his engineering industry career and managing, you know, $100 million projects and stuff was all information he could take, culminated together to create, you know, the 365 driven society. But yeah, that's what his, for listeners, you want to learn about side hustles, pick up Tony's book on Audible or Amazon, Side Hustle Millionaire. It is phenomenal, right?
And I like to think as well, building on that, Dwight, like I'm trying to think this out now, but how phenomenal could it have been if the organization was able to kind of like recognize Tony and help him, you know, help incorporate his side hustle and his full-time job throughout it. And that's what I'm really passionate about as well in this culture space. And what I think Kratic kind of helps individuals do is, if you have an individual that's like extremely successful in TikTok or has like a YouTube channel or something like that,
tap into it.
Yeah, tap into it. How can you incorporate that in their day-to-day, right? I think there's a massive amount of internal talent that organizations have access to where sometimes they're not doing it on their full-time day-to-day. But if you're able to incorporate it, you know they're passionate about it. Like they're dedicating countless hours on the side to do it. How can you integrate it into their day-to-day? Obviously following proper protocol and everything like that. But I think we're going to see a lot of that, I think, happening in the future in large organizations where the lines between, you know, entrepreneurship, the startup community, and these large organizations are blurred a little bit, and they're able to inspire a lot of innovation within their own walls and within industry as well.
Well, they need to, because they're the industry itself, right? Not just the engineering industry, the professional industry is suffering because people are not feeling satisfied. And that's what a lot of times leads them to not necessarily satisfied with their job, just satisfied with, they want more, as you mentioned. So they want to level up and they're looking at side hustles to do that. Yet their talents are immeasurably phenomenal for the company. And if, instead of having company culture or rules where they say you can't do this, right? And I have not a lot of people that have walked away from their careers to do their side hustle when they could have done both, as you're mentioning, and it would have enhanced the company they work for. The company could have the synergy. They're losing out because of the fact that the thought processes in most corporations is broken. They don't get the fact. And I like how you put that. There has to be a way to reignite culture. And it is dead in so many ways. Right. And you more than I know that, especially with the, you know, the path that Israel and you are on. And that's amazing though, that, you know, you mentioned how it was Israel, you know, you give credit where credit's due, but then he gave you credit back. You were a support mechanism for him. And just because you may not have designed specific things, he respects you enough to give you credit that you were a help for him, that you were somebody that encouraged or give him information or helped him through this process. And that's phenomenal. That's a person in your life for life. And you're blessed, in my opinion. So many of us will never find somebody like that, right? And that's amazing. For me, I may not be in business with Tony, but we're in business of helping and serving others. So we still can, you know, he's way more of a support to me than I can ever be to him. But you found somebody that you're synergizing, connecting with, that, you know, it's going to make a difference. And like you said, your whole thing is to bottle this stuff and saying, here, open it up and drink this. This will change your life, right? So that's amazing. So Mike, there are other tool company, you know, other tools that companies offer that measure team culture. Craddock has stated to build culture, right? Is not measurement a key element though, to get to the point of changing and building a great culture?
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Measurement is absolutely critical to know your starting point and your baseline. I think, unfortunately, what we've seen in some of the companies that we've been working with and talking with is that that's where a lot of it stops sometimes. So you hear about annual engagement surveys where nothing comes out of them, or it creates a false hope, which oftentimes can be worse than actual hope, right? Yeah. Where they think something's going to change or not, or they gather all this data, but they're just not sure what to do with it. There's too much data and they're not sure even where to begin. So Craddock measures and improves culture, which is kind of the differentiator. But you're absolutely correct in that you need to have that measurement as a baseline. What was really interesting and kind of hooked me towards this product when I was talking with Israel, as we were kind of in the genesis of this, is all my exposure so far has always been on, you know, employee engagement surveys or something that has like rank out of 10, like how are you feeling out of 10, or how motivated are you out of 5, or how likely are you to promote our product out of 7? These are all great questions, but when you're only asking kind of, you know, a ranking system like that, it's very quantitative, but people are able to be inauthentic, like they can kind of change their ranking depending on their mood. And you're not able to actually pull that much data. At the end of the day, you have like one number. So what Craddock does that is a little bit different is that everything is an open-ended text-based response. So we have over 600 questions in our database, all kind of surrounded around different engagement topics. One of my favorites is, what's the difference between manipulation and influence? That always generates a really good discussion in the group. But what happens is everyone anonymously submits their answers and then reviews them as a team together. And when they anonymously submit their text-based response, we run that through IBM Watson's natural language processing, and we pull so many more characteristics about that response than what would ever be possible just on a rank out of 10. So for example, very similar in this conversation, like your listeners might have already perceived certain things about me. Maybe they think that I came up high in positivity, low in focus, which is generally kind of what I tend to dart around a little bit. Maybe high in agreeableness, which is generally my profile, high in friendliness, and maybe a little bit lower in emotional balance. That's like a little bit of my profile, and similar to how your listeners or yourself or others might get that from the way I talk and our conversations there, IBM Watson and Craddock does that with the words that you use. So when we ask questions about employee development or working with your leader, we're able to pull this rich, rich data set around how positive people talk about this, how open people are when they talk about this, how agreeable they are, how conscientious they are. I mean, it's really for the first time in history, I think, using this technology, we're able to measure corporations on their corporate values. So if a corporation says that diversity or, integrity, whatever it might be, is part of their values, does that actually exist in the language people use every day? And you can measure that through IBM Watson.
Well, yeah, because so many people are a facade. Corporations are a person, really. They are an entity. And I see and hear that all the time. And our basic own personal lives, we can be a facade. We can say that we are one way and that we believe a certain thing, yet our actions don't show it. they don't facilitate it, and we live a life of that facade. So it's interesting though. So it triggers, I figured it did. That was one of the other questions, but you brought it, got into that already, which is amazing. It flowed really nicely. I appreciate that. So triggering on specific words. So your algorithm, obviously you have an algorithm with Watson going through that and triggering on specific words, because specific words, whether we acknowledge it in our conscious mind, trigger emotional state, right? They trigger certain things. So that's amazing how it's able to do that. And you talk about 600 questions. Wow. That is intense. Listeners, you should check this out, especially if you're in a culture where you feel that you're not worthy, or, you know, you're made to feel that way, part of me, and your culture, or you have any form of influence where you're at, or at least you can talk to somebody that has influence. This could really change your life, because so many corporations out there that employ people, the more I read up on Craddock last night, and I was looking through the sheets that you had sent and how it shows how it's, you're working more. And I don't know if really want to, if it's the right word, but it looks like a pod situation where you have the unity and the pods around it and how everything connects with information. It's, you know, I can't do it justice, obviously. And it's pretty hard for even yourself in a short period of time. But I know myself, listeners, those of you that understand who I am, I was excited about it going through it, because so many companies are a facade. The management says one thing yet does something completely different. It's like parents that say to the kids, you know what, don't do what I do, do what I say. Right. So they do something that's wrong, tell their kids that they can't do it. And if their kids do it, they get in trouble. And companies are like that too. Mike, you need to do things this way. But yet that person that's telling you that doesn't do it themselves. Right. They're being hypocritical. And the world sees a facade that everything's all rosy and red, yet behind that, the culture of the company and people, the mistrust, the lack of communication, it slowly erodes businesses, and they lose business because of it, because they may be talking, in my experience, they're talking to one of the company's clients or somebody within the company, and they say something that's not genuine to the company and what they represent. And they don't realize that they presented it the wrong way. And all of a sudden they've lost trust with that company or that client or their own staff. And it's that erosion. I just see it as getting so toxic, as we talked, as I mentioned earlier, when I was reading your bio, there's so much toxicity out there. So good on you guys. I love and that.
If I could add to that briefly.
Absolutely.
Too,
go ahead.
I'd add two things. Firstly, I'd say you hit the nail on the head in that corporations are exactly like people, and like some have that facade, but I'd also emphasize that some don't, and some really are like living their values every day, and you see it permeate through. And it goes back to kind of my original comment that I've seen some really incredible cultures, you know, even before using Craddock, that kind of just use Craddock to help inspire a little bit more, like good to great type style. So I've seen now, working with a few different organizations, ones that are just truly aligned right from the top to the bottom and really live and breathe their cultures, and you kind of see it every day. And then unfortunately too, also experience sometimes where they're just not aligned, or some feel a little bit strained. So very much kind of dependent on the organization itself. I'd also say to your comments on the algorithm, which I'm glad you kind of called out and brought out, the biggest part, and this is huge kudos to Israel and kind of how he designed the program, but very similar to in your podcast and what I've seen you do multiple times, you kind of think, you digest, and then you ask a different question based on what was just said, right? You don't come in with the same set of questions for every podcast guest. And Craddock does the exact same thing for teams. So it actually looks at everyone's responses using natural language processing, kind of finds the average tone or sentiment of what's happening, and then strategically picks the next week's questions based on that. So what that means is, in an entire organization that's running this, they're going to have all their teams kind of going through their own question journey of what's important to them, because one team might want to talk about peer-to-peer feedback. Another team might want to talk about relationships with management. Another team might want to talk about values. And so our tool really lets everyone kind of talk about these things individually as teams, the things that they want to talk about. And it's not a, homogeneous approach for the entire organization.
Well, it's like personalized.
It's personalized.
It's exactly. Very personalized. And it's weird, you know, like when I think about it and I feel the emotion of what you were just talking about, it's a warm feeling. It's like, wow, there's something out there that can change culture by analyzing the questions and realizing that this team needs this this week, this team needs this. And somebody, and, you know, has literally had their day or their life change because of AI, mm-hmm. which is still driven by people. Mm-hmm. Listeners, don't forget that. Ever forget that AI or computers are only as smart as the data we give them and Absolutely. Help them process. And then the back end of it still had to be created by an intelligent, thought-provoking, kind individual like Israel and yourself working on this. And I know, like you said, Israel did a lot of it, but you still had influence on the whole process. So good for you guys. That is, I like that natural language and tone, right? Mm-hmm. How many people don't give that credit though? Just that a word or a phrase or a question has a tone to it, mm-hmm. right? Has a hidden meaning, which doesn't have to be hidden,
yeah. right?
So that's, I love that. That's amazing. I look forward to learning more and more about this process, and hopefully, you know, listeners reach out to Mike. We're going to talk about that at the end of the show, how you're going to be able to reach out to him so that you two can give a heck, right? Mm-hmm. Teach others in your organization that there's, we can change, right? And it's not going to be painful. It's going to be actually very uplifting. I'm uplifted just by this, and I haven't gone through the process, just learning what I read last night as I was wanting to learn more about you, checking out the social media and the media pack you sent me. You know, I got excited about it, and I can't imagine somebody actually hiring you guys and going through the process, how the energy of their you know, their organization, their energy just is, it can go through the roof. And from what I was reading, it can be done in a very short period of time. You can see,
oh,
I forget the name of that index you talk about. I apologize. I should have put that in my notes, but at how you can see, like, you have a minimum.
The employee net promoter score,
yes.
I think.
Yes. If you want to talk about that.
If
you could you mention a little bit about that? And because I know you have a base guarantee too of 20 points, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Again, I read so much stuff. I apologize if I got that number wrong.
No. And that's all on our website as well. So your listeners can go and check it out.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell them.
Yeah, so the employee net promoter score is something that we didn't create. I believe it comes from Bain Consulting, although I might be wrong. It might be from another major consulting firm. But it kind of started with this concept of net promotion score of your customers. So how positive are your customers talking about your organization? And that's a really valuable metric, because you want more promoters than detractors. You want more people giving you nines and tens than there are below sevens. And then, so that's kind of what you're trying to do with your customers, is shift them up to promoters. So eventually what somebody had done was said, well, if you look at an organization, there's really three core parts of it, right? You have the governance, and then you have your customers, which are critical, and then you have your employees. And so they developed the employee net promoter score, which uses the exact same language. It's how likely are you to promote your company to friends or colleagues or family to work with. And so that's what we started using as one of our major metrics as well that we move, just because, pardon me, it's already been adopted so much in industry, and it's already kind of taken over. Like, I've seen a lot of companies already measuring their employee net promoter score. So what we guarantee is in just 8 weeks, seeing that employee net promoter score increase by 20 points. And we've seen that in results with the teams that we've worked with so far. What this means is your employees are talking more positively and more frequently about your organization than ever before. And this is just done again. Like, I mean, honestly, it's just done through authentic and open dialogue. Like, you don't necessarily need to use the Socratic tool. If you get together as a team every week and you start having an honest and open dialogue and you start talking about things that matter to them, then you'll also see an increase. We just think that through strategic questioning, you're going to see that increase a little bit faster and a little bit more pointed.
Well, you can just dial it to the fact of consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's all about consistency. So yes, there can be companies, And again, I don't want any of the listeners or people that are watching this on YouTube to think that I believe all companies are bad, because Mike's brought it up. There is some good companies. There is cultures out there that are decent. But the problem is it can fall apart, in my opinion, from the companies I've worked with, as fast as it's developed. And Craddock and what you're developing is a consistent tool to ensure that even if they have their weekly meetings and they've been doing that, it becomes like being in a hamster wheel. And I could be wrong, or being on a treadmill. You're always just constantly running, and you're you know what I mean? And you think that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you're doing the same thing week in and week out. But Craddock it analyzes that circumstance and can catch things that you and I as humans will just see the surface. We'll see the facade of the room delivering the same thing that they think that Mike wants to hear.
Absolutely. Yeah. And right? We really break it down to like two big problems or opportunities right now in culture. And I think you just articulated one of them. The first one is that you're not getting your best out of individuals. And it's exactly like you said, where you're going through the motions, or you're kind of feeling like, okay, you know, I'm just going to keep going forward with this. This is good enough, right? We hear that all the time. This is good enough for me. So that's kind of the first opportunity that we see, is how can you get that single employee that might be, you know, in that good enough mode, giving 60 or 70% to give them 100%, right? And then the second problem that we see is how can you get teams to actually communicate more effectively? So individuals to perform at their best, then teams to actually have trust and authenticity with one another, that they can perform together at their best. And those are the two things that we try to improve in organizations.
And that's amazing. And another thing that just popped into my mind is it takes away the human connection of people not liking what somebody presents themselves at. So a boss or a supervisor or just a fellow employee might not be the greatest at presenting information or helping, you know, people level up, and they actually slow down. Whereas you've taken away that human good and bad, because human connection, I'm not saying is bad. Relationships are phenomenal. You need to have them. That Craddock tool that you guys have developed is giving people the ability to separate themselves from the emotional part of it, and then just have that data analyzed. And then they can say, so now that same person can say, well, based on this, this is what we need to work on. And now you can have open dialogue and communication, but it took away the fact of the judgment from a human and put it into an AI. Would I be kind of correct in that, and how it actually can elevate and make it easier for a supervisor, boss, or a team to work together, because now it's taken out that human judgment and said, oh, this is the AI doing it, right?
Absolutely.
This is how, right?
Yeah, I think, again, there's a really good story actually that I think is the perfect kind of example of what you just mentioned there. So I'll talk a little bit about myself and just be a little bit vulnerable, that I had an unconscious bias that I was aware of this year, that of what I perceived as a leader. And that unconscious bias is that, you know, they're very vocal in a room, they're kind of contributing in meetings, they're, you know, maybe a little bit more A type, everything that maybe I've seen in movies and stuff like that about what a leader is. So that was my unconscious bias that I had, that in a room, those are the types of people that are either official or unofficial leaders. What happened through Craddock is we were working with one team within an organization. And so you can see everybody's data and kind of votes coming in. But the number one thing about Craddock is it's always completely anonymous and for that person's self-development. So we never feed that back to the organization. But there was one individual that they were registering kind of off the charts on a lot of traits, and they were getting a lot of votes by team members. So very much this individual, based on Craddock and what we were seeing, would have been seen as a potential leader or a leader or a high achiever or something like that. There was something unique about this individual. So part of the Craddock process is they have the opportunity to opt in and actually share their data with the organization if they want to. And so they did choose to share their data. So it did kind of get back to their manager leader. And the leader just kind of sat back and said, like, whoa, I never would have assumed that this individual would have been contributing like this way in these Craddock conversations. Because there is some bias in the natural language processing in terms of how it registers language, but it also eliminates some bias in that everybody's being ranked the same way. And this individual barely spoke in meetings. Like, they were very, very quiet. They were a little bit more introverted. They weren't the first to put up their hand, but anything they said in a cratic environment, everyone is gravitating towards, and everybody was getting resonating with and wanted to talk more about. And they were kind of from behind the scenes leading the cratic conversations with their comments. So this individual actually, they got together, they had that coaching conversation, again, a testament to, I think, the great culture that that organization had. They talked about, how can we get a little bit more of this? What are you comfortable with? And they started integrating that person into a lot more of their conversations and dialogues. They didn't necessarily say you need to speak up more in meetings, because that's just wasn't who this person was. But they did start touching base with them after meetings, kind of seeing, what did you think about that? Where could we improve? And I think it really changed the trajectory of this person's career. And those are the types of stories that, like, we love, where someone that, you might not have initially assumed, I think we really did change the trajectory of their career. And that feels pretty good.
Oh, makes me feel good. just hearing it makes me feel good, because so many people hide in the shadows and they don't want to be pulled front and center. But I look at it and think to myself, wow, that changed that person's work trajectory. But what about their personal trajectory? Mm-hmm. and their sense of self-worth, their worthiness? Wow. Mm-hmm. People do care what I have to say. I can still stay in the shadows, but yet they can come to me and say, hey, what did you think about this? What? They actually want to know what I think? This is amazing. All of a sudden, I guarantee that person's productivity was already decent. Now I guarantee it's gone up. I'd be shocked if it hasn't. Not just productivity at work in their personal life, because really people say, leave your work at work and don't bring it home. Let's get real. Everything is interjected and combined together. We can try to live a facade at work and live a different life at home, but they do intertwine. And the sooner we accept it and live the life of the people that talk to me in business, I'm sitting at a client's place, or I've gone to their business, or when I used to have an office and had, interact with lots of people. If they come to my house now for a coffee, they're going to find the same Dwight, the kind, compassionate, blunt person, right? Empathetic, that they're going to find when I was at their office or they were at my office. And that is, you're creating a unity between people's personal and their work. Obviously I'll never meet that person, but I feel glad for them. If that sounds weird, it's right. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I feel happy for them.
That's exactly the experience we want to create for people. We want more people to kind of feel like that throughout. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it's the same thing you do, I think, on your podcast. We're just about creating authentic, open conversations. And we know that if you can create more of those in the workplace, you're going to have a better workplace. And that's kind of our entire thesis.
That's fantastic. So we have touched a little bit on this already. Obviously there's going to be overlap on this, but I want to see what your response is going to be. So Mike, Craddock creates custom growth experiences for every team, which we've talked about, and the user finds exact topics each team needs to discuss to move forward. And it generates loads of insight. It identifies, listeners, listen to this. It identifies success factors, low hanging fruit, informal leaders, thought leaders, which Mike just talked about, a thought leader that people didn't realize, networkers, exemplars, high potentials, personality insights, coaching tips, and so much more. Which, it just, when I read that last night, it just totally blew me away. It was just like, I didn't realize there could be that many things that anything could sit down and analyze. And that's just phenomenal. Can you step us through more of the process of how it's able to identify? Again, you talked about keywords and stuff, and create what you call the culture thumbprint.
Yes, absolutely. So identify more kind of how we create that culture thumbprint or how we run the Kratic process. Okay.
Yes.
So we've kept it really simple, and we've tried to intentionally, because culture is simple. It comes back to, again, what I just mentioned around creating conversations. So there's three steps to every Kratic process. The first step is just answering the question. So every week you kind of walk into the system, you log into the website, and you answer your five questions for the week. That's the first step. Immediately, as soon as you answer, all of your answers are analyzed through IBM Watson, and we give that data back to you so that you can actually see your own insights. It ranks it based on positivity, conscientiousness, openness, agreeableness, friendliness, all sorts of different topics. And we feed that back so that people can kind of see how their language is interpreted. The second part of the Kratic process is they get together once a week in an environment to actually discuss the answers. So in that once a week meeting, you sit down, we keep it 30 minutes. People have requested that they be longer, but we're very strategic in keeping it just 30 minutes because we always want to leave people wanting a little bit more. And they just talk about what they're seeing in the tool. Sometimes you spend the entire 30 minutes and you can get through all five questions. Other times you spend the entire 30 minutes on one question and anything's okay. Like, this is just a complete team facilitated experience. Israel and myself or someone from the Kratic team will facilitate the first one, but after that, it's immediately run by the team, because we believe that you don't need outside consultants or anything to help you to find your own culture. It kind of resonates with yourself. So it's actually a process that's done by the team themselves. So they get together, they discuss what they're seeing in the tool. And then the third step is just to repeat that. And you repeat that process on a weekly basis for 8 weeks. And that generates what we call the diagnostic. So that gives us a really good overview of a group's culture. And then after that 8 weeks, you shift gears down a bit and you just do it once a month to maintain your culture. And our natural language processing, IBM Watson, and our algorithm on the back end is kind of monitoring your team culture, giving them the right questions to keep things kind of
fluid
and to keep things improving. And if at any point there's a massive cultural change, like let's say they get a new leader or you get new leadership, or you're all working from home all of a sudden through a massive pandemic, then you just turn on your Kratic for a higher frequency and you can say, okay, I want to do 4 weeks worth this week. And then it'll kind of help realign the team. We really help people accelerate that storming, norming, and performing type cycle. So that's the process, really simply. You answer the questions, you discuss the questions, then you repeat it. Now, where kind of that self-awareness comes in and where it gets really interesting is, I'll use another story. Everything, as I mentioned, is kind of looked at and analyzed and fed back to you. So we had one individual in an organization who had worked with the organization for quite some time. And she had kind of mentioned to us that there's a problem with IBM Watson. It's not registering her answers properly. And this was in a team environment, like in front of everyone. So we're like, okay, tell us more about that. Like, what do you think's going on? And she mentioned that her positivity scores were coming in really low. And so we're like, okay, would you be comfortable maybe sharing some of your answers? Because we can't see that. It's all on the back end. Like, let's talk about this. And she was very, very open. She was, a very excellent individual. And she's like, yeah, these are a few of my answers. And so she read out some of her answers. And then I asked the team, I'm like, okay, well, how does the team feel about that? Like, are those positive answers? Do you see those as positive? And slowly, one by one, individuals were kind of like, I don't view that as that positive. Like, it actually kind of sounds negative to me. And you could see the moment of self-realization on that individual's face, where they had realized, possibly for the first time in their career, where their email communication and their texting and writing style was very different than what they were in person. In person, they were very much a green or a yellow, if you're familiar with Myers-Briggs, like very people-oriented, very bubbly, very bright. But in their email communication, they were very much a red and very much more direct, short, and to the point. And so that was being interpreted as less positive between the team and with IBM Watson. And to this individual's credit, like she loved it. She's like, I can't believe this. Like, it's really kind of interesting to hear that. I kind of mean it this way, but I understand how others could take it that way. And she started changing her answers a little bit in the tool. And we've seen her positivity increase since then. And that's exactly what we want people to do with the tool, is like play around with it. Try to get really high on positivity. Try to get really low on positivity. Like, there's no right answers here. Some of the best conversations that I've ever been a part of have been extremely negative, because that's where a lot of growth happens too, right? But what is important is that you're conscious about the words you use, and that you're conscious about the impact they have on others. And I think that's what Craddock helps reaffirm with people.
Yeah, because wordsmithing, as I talk about it with people, is so imperative. Mm-hmm. I get lots of people that think they're positive, and yet they walk into a room and start talking and they suck all the energy out of it. Mm-hmm. they're so oblivious to the fact of that they don't come across the right way, they use the wrong words, or they're too short. Sometimes you need to be short and concise, but you can do, again, it's not what we say, it's how we say it. It's such a simplistic phrase, but it's true. And I've taught my kids since they were little, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. I can say the same thing, you know, one way to one person, say it to somebody different, and their interpretation can be completely different based on where they're at in their lives, what's going on in their work and personal lives. But I need to consciously think, I can't say something and please 100% of the people, but I can say something and please more people than I ever have before. And it's something that she's going to work on the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it, if she truly wants to, right? Obviously, nobody can force and put a gun to somebody's head and say, you have to be this way. But her vulnerability is what is a stepping stone for her change, by being in a room and saying, well, this is what, you know, I get it. You know, that had to have been humbling for her.
Absolutely. And that's another really big positive that I've seen working with, I think, all these teams, is for the most part, actually, everybody has been very open to learning from these experiences. And I think because it's coming from the team, it's coming from like a group of peers that you trust, that you respect, that you work with. It's a very eye-opening and kind of emotional process. Like obviously, hopefully you see my values in the tool. Hopefully it's helpful and you have a lot of laughs, but we've also had people cry during Craddock sessions, right? Because they talk about the experience of what it was like maybe walking their friend out the door who's worked there for quite some time, or what
the
it was
healing,
like.
The healing it creates. The healing. Mm-hmm. Right? And
absolutely.
Take it away from just work. That is going to flow, as I mentioned, life, work and home life are tied together. We can ignore it, but it's a reality. It's making their home life different.
It's funny you mentioned that, because actually just last week someone said to us, they're like, can I use this with my family and stuff? And that was we never considered that before. That's not the tool's purpose. Like, it's for work,
but it can be.
But it, yeah, can it be. Can be. Yeah.
Do you know how many broken family cultures there is? And it propagated from great grandparents to grandparents to parents to kids to their kids to it's just, I'm not saying that you have to do this, but I could see the power of this being a great personal tool that psychologists and psychiatrists would die to have, because they bring their own crap into their profession too, just from experience and dealing with them, because of, you know, kids, grandkids and stuff, and clients talking to them about their therapy and stuff that they've gone through. Craddock takes away that personal problem, gives it to, just like that girl saying, well, it says I'm negative. Well, guess what? You are. Now you just shared it with your peers and they're saying you are. You have some negativity issues based on your words, and it's going to help correct her. Take that to the level of home life, right? And I can't imagine how that could help and be a tool that can create massive change within family dynamics, so that they can break that chain, break that cycle, and move forward and having a healthier home environment, which goes back to the work, goes back to home, goes back to work. I can just see it becoming a good hamster wheel.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what we're striving towards as well. We also, I mean, there's a bunch of populations that we want to start working with more, just because free of charge and everything, just because we want to get people kind of talking and having more authentic conversations and the good hamster wheel, like you say. So we're hoping that we're able to get into those fields and areas soon too, as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really appreciate everything you've shared. So, Mike, if you had to give our listeners one last closing message, what would you tell them in regards to giving a heck and never giving up?
One last closing message. I want to make it a good one. It's a good question, though. Let me just take a second.
Sure.
I would say, and it's kind of been a reoccurring theme for this entire podcast, try to bring your true, like, authentic selves to all aspects of your life. And this is something that it took me, I think, a long time to learn and kind of explore. I had originally kept parts of my life very separate. Like, I had my work life, I have my Craddock life, I have my family life, I have my friends life, and even my friends group, I like keep a little bit separate and everything, right? But the important thing is that you're authentic and your true self with all of them. And when you're able to combine them, if you're able to combine them, it can actually be really, really incredible and synergistic for both. Like, so, I mean, if you can get it to the point where your family group is also your friend group, and like, that would be really synergistic, obviously, right? If you can take your startup and combine it appropriately with your work life, like, that could be really synergistic. If you can, and you're comfortable kind of combining these things to be your true authentic self everywhere, then that's going to help you live, I think, with more purpose, and it will fulfill you more. And I think you'll be more productive. So where possible, try to explore opportunities like that, maybe I'd suggest.
Oh, absolutely. Because we live a world where people wake up in the morning and they're dread going to work. And now if they can change their thought process, they're 6 inches between their ears and realize that, hey, I'm leaving my family to go to my extended family. I'm going to somewhere where they give a heck about me and what I have to say. It's not always going to be, you know, roses and sunshine. Life isn't that way. My family life isn't that way. I'm going to have good moments and bad moments, as you and I have discussed. Can you imagine how, well, you probably have, but listeners, can you imagine having a world where you wake up every single day and are excited to go to work, to be with your extended family, knowing that there's going to be some character building moments, but in that you're respected, you're appreciated, you feel worthy. The productivity of our world would go through the roof. We accomplish things in so much smaller time frames because we're not having to, you know, shift and separate and sift through all the noise, right? So yeah, the Craddock and Israel and yourself are a needed thing. And again, definitely. And it's something that needs to, again, grow beyond just businesses. You can tell Israel I said that. And if he actually listens, you know, hopefully listens to the podcast and realizes really what I think he does, but it realizes the potential of it moving forward for mankind, humankind, not just work, right? So
absolutely. I'm sure he will listen. I would want to say too that I think add to what you just said there, because I think it was really important. One of the positive things that I think came out of the pandemic, and I try to like find the positive in everything, is that I think people have been given more time to do that exploration on what makes them happy and what their purpose is. And I do think there's been some really great direction there. I think people are thinking about it critically now more than ever. Like, where do I want to spend my career? What do I want to be doing? And I think that's a really great direction. I see a lot of it too in Gen Z and the younger generations, just being very purpose-driven, like giving a heck. And I think it's a really great change. You know, I personally didn't stop and think like what makes me happy for a long time, which sounds weird and strange to say out loud, but I didn't really consider it until I was like 22 or 23. I was kind of just going through the motions of what you're supposed to do, right? But I think now with the pandemic, people are sitting down and thinking about that a lot more. And I'm really excited to see where it takes all of us.
Oh, absolutely. There's the pandemic for some has been catastrophe, depression, anxiety, sadness, boo-hoo, woo-hoo, the world's going to end. And others have used it as a pivotal stepping stone, right? Look at myself, the pandemic hit and I had already thought about changing the ways and I had started the process. And since the pandemic started, I completely pivoted analyzed again my life, what I wanted to do, looked at what worked, what didn't work, discarded the stuff that didn't work, and found places to things to replace it. And we all have to have that self-reflection. And it'll be interesting to see, because really we're not on the other side of the pandemic yet. So it'll be interesting to see how many people are going to be stuck in the same place or that much worse, and how many people on the positive side have leveled up, are climbing again in life because the pandemic gave them so much time to self-analyze and be self-aware of their circumstances, to network with great people such as yourself, to find different tools like Craddock to change and elevate. I agree with you 100%. I'm already seeing it a lot, but part of the reason that I see it a lot is the associations I have. So listeners, if you're not seeing any positiveness in your life, maybe check out of your current associations and find some new ones. I'm not saying get rid of them, throw all the people you have in your life away. Maybe inject a few more positive people that are elevating and climbing and moving forward, like Mike and myself and Israel, of course, as well. Right. So,
yeah. And I'd also just say that there's no playbook for the pandemic. So there's no,
I'm not judging anybody. I'm not judging.
Yeah. No way. No, I mean, just get through it. And whatever we need to do to get through it is kind of the important thing. And then afterwards, go through all that stuff. Well said, Dwight.
Yeah. Find somebody right now that can help you go through that. Right. You know what? As one last note, listeners, one text, one simple email, one social media post where you tag somebody and it can make a difference in their lives because they're feeling helpless and sheltered. You can be that catalyst. Don't ever think that one person can't make a difference, because you can. I can. Mike can. Israel can. We all can. And some of us are just farther in the journey. We're never judging you. Reach out to us. Have a simple conversation. That's how Mike and I connected. Mike reached out to me, wanted to have a conversation. We had a couple of them and they were phenomenal. And now look where Mike and I are. We've become friends to help level up and support one another so that we can continue to give a heck, so that we can help others and serve others and help them continue to give a heck about their lives. Or maybe for the first time in their lives, give a heck because they've been on a hamster wheel in a negative way. So don't ever think you're alone. We're here. Reach out. And on that note, you know, our time's almost up. I want to respect our listeners and your time. Can you please tell the listeners, what's the best way to reach you?
So probably the best way is just check out our website, www.craddock.ai, or just reach out directly with email. My email is mike@craddock.ai. And both of those would be great. We do have a message box on our website as well. Or on LinkedIn as well, Michael Procy, you can find me on there. So feel free to reach out. I'd love to hear what your listeners thought about this. And looking forward to chatting with anyone who wants to learn more.
Yeah, I'll make sure it's all in all the show notes, which listeners or people watching, you can access at giveaheck.com. Simply go into the podcast portal and you'll be able to read the show notes and find all the access that you need to reach out to Mike and find out more about the Craddock process, more than you've already learned, which is quite a bit. We've covered a lot in the last hour, and how it can change your life. And really, it can change more than just your work life. It can change how you feel about yourself between the 6 inches between your ears. So thanks so much for being on Give a Heck, Mike. I appreciate your time and sharing some of the experiences so that others too can learn it is never too late to give a heck.
Thank you for taking time out of your day and listening to Give a Heck. If you find value, I'd appreciate you sharing with your friends and family so they too can learn how to live life on purpose, not by accident. So you do not miss the next episode, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and please also post a review. I look forward to reading your comments. This has been Dwight Heck. If you want to check out other podcast episodes or today's show notes, please check out my website, giveaheck.com. And until next time, together, let us all strive to give a heck.